Session number 8257.
Steve Moyle, Reel 5. Could you tell me how you became a butcher for your battalion?
Yes, we had a butcher came out, a ship's butcher came out with us on the Franconia. His name was Fred Oldfield from Liverpool. And Fred was a good butcher. And he kept on until, I think it was towards the end of July. And then he was taken ill, I don't know what with, but he was sent off the peninsula to Mudros, and I never heard anything further from him. But I was a butcher, and they heard about it, and I was asked to take over the job, which I did.
When was this exactly?
But towards the end of July, near as I can remember. And I was very glad too. I was out of the front line, I was out of the sentry goes and so on. And I used to give a general hand, besides butchering, I'd do a bit help on the veggies and this, you know. But the meat I got was pretty straightforward. It was just a matter of boning out and taking the bones to the cook and letting him make whatever soups was it. And different joints, well, the best joints would go to the officers, of course. Aye.
Where did you do this work?
Just outside the cookhouse.
Did you have a special table?
And the store. There's a storekeeper there, you know. He had all the stores. And I was under his command, chief petty officer.
Did you have a special table and an adequate butchery tools?
Oh, yeah.
You know, knives and
yes.
things?
Oh, yeah.
You worked in the open then?
Well, I was undercover from the sun, you know. But there was a bit of trouble with the flies. You sit down there, you know, you got the old flies buzzing around.
Was the meat in good condition when it arrived? Was it fresh?
Oh, yes. Yeah. But that came ashore with general stores and your mail and all that came ashore, you see, from Mudros, I suppose.
Where did you live while you were doing this butchery business?
Oh, I was in the gully, and in this gully was a dugout, and that's where I used to sleep at night.
Do you know the name of the gully or where it was on the peninsula?
No, it's on the left.
Was it Gully Ravine?
Hmm?
Was it Gully Ravine? Was it a big gully, a very big
one?
No,
it was only a small gully.
Oh, yeah.
Not so deep as the ravine. But they seemed to run down the left, these gullies and ravines, as I could see of it. And as we retreated down the main gully, down the main ravine, machine gun stationed along there, you know.
So, what can you describe your dugout? Were you in there on your own?
Oh, yes.
Did you live there for the rest of your period on the peninsula?
Yeah.
Could you describe it then, the dugout, how deep it was, what you had in there, that sort of thing? Or was it just a hole in the ground?
Well, it wasn't a very deep one. It's simply in the side of the gully. You see, you got protection in the side of the gully where they dugout was.
About how far did you dig? Was it dug in?
Oh, about 10 feet, I should say.
Did it? Was it just a tunnel, or did it widen out into a sort of room?
No, it was a place for a berth. You know, to put your bed in there.
You had an actual bed in there.
And you should see the lizards darting about it. Yeah.
Inside the. What sort of lizards?
Aye, just the only lizards, you know.
What else did you have in there? You say you had a bed in there? Or was it just a bedding equipment?
Just a place for your bed, you know.
Was there anything else kept in there?
Only your personal effects, that's all you said.
What sort of personal effects?
Well, You see, you had to keep your rifle and burn your pack and all your equipment in case you were called back to the line, you see.
So that was all in there.
Yeah.
How did you light it?
How
did you keep it lit? You know, what did you use for light?
Oh, I don't think we used any light to... But I remember, Peter, very much with a candle.
So, can you remember what you'd do on a typical day as a butcher then? What time you'd get up? How long you'd work on the table, butcher, you know, doing your trade?
Oh, I'd be about 2 or 3 hours, perhaps, in the butcher's shop.
And what else did you have to do during the day?
Well, very little, only perhaps do the veggies and so on for the next day and get ready for your job the next day.
And then?
You see, sometimes you get frozen beef, well, they'd have to be put to thaw out for the next day's job and so on.
And so, what did you do when you weren't doing the butchery or the vegetables, being a butcher or doing the vegetables?
Living the boat.
You just, well, whereabouts would you go? Would you go to the beaches or would you just lie
no,
in the dugout?
No, I should stick around. I should stick around, Peter. Didn't wonder about much.
And you just lay, not laze around, but you just lie about the place and rest and...
Yeah.
So would it be fair to say that it was a fairly easy life, with the exception of the fact
well,
that you were under
fire?
Well,
it's damn sight better than being in the trenches. I'd say it was.
You were pleased to be out of the trenches?
Yes, you could keep yourself clean. And you weren't lousy as you were in the trenches.
Can you remember any special incidents between July and December or January when you were evacuated? Is there anything that sticks out in your mind, or was it just all fairly the same?
Pretty well daily routine. Yeah. Nothing very exciting, Peter, except in the few shells that come over and that, you know. We were shelled there.
What about the freeze in, I think it was late November, was it? And it got very cold. Do you remember that? How did you cope with the deteriorating weather as winter came in?
I don't remember any really bad weather there, Peter. Not as regards cold, being cold, you know. Because, let's see, July. July till we evacuated. Which is January. Then it was starting to get really cold. And
did you have the proper equipment to stop yourself being? Did you get enough clothes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you know what was happening in the battalion while you were?
Oh, I was get your mates come down. You'd have a yarn with them, you know.
Were they still suffering a lot of casualties?
Well, they didn't seem to be so bad later on. You know, the conditions were improving. And when I went down last time, before I took on Bush's job, they'd built troughs, brand new wooden troughs. And these were had water continually going in. And people used to get all the water and fill the bottles and so on.
This was near the front line, was it?
Near the beach.
Near.
I remember the last time I went down, I was really thirsty that time, and I got down and drank like an animal in this trough, you know.
When did you catch jaundice?
It was pretty well between July and the evacuation.
You don't remember the date? Or the month?
No.
Did you suffer badly from it, or did you have a mild attack?
No, it was only a mild attack, I think.
What were the symptoms here? But you went yellow in the face.
Yeah,
and
you're right. The whites of your eyes were yellow.
But there was no question of evacuating you to Mudros, was there?
Yeah.
Did they?
Never sent me off. I was never off the peninsula, Peter. No. Until 2 days before, 2 days before the final. They couldn't all rush off the peninsula at once, you know. The passes were sent down and taken off.
So could you tell me what happened in the period leading up to the evacuation, what you saw and what you did?
During the evacuation?
Yes, just before it.
Well, we were a party, it was mustered about 20, under the Saddlebar Fort. And if everything was clear, you made your way across the beach to the River Clyde. That was a collier that had been on the shore at the landing. But on the night time, if it was night time, there was a sentry posted on the Saddlebar Fort, and his job was to watch across towards Cwm Cale, where a large howitzer was situated. Direct low trajectory gunfire couldn't clear the fort, so they had this howitzer to clear the Saddlebar Fort and land on V Beach as near as possible. And this sentry, his job was to watch for the flash of this howitzer gun when he sounded off. And that meant if you were, your party was between the Saddlebar Fort and the River Clyde, you made for the nearest one, whichever was the best, was back to the fort or to the River Clyde. And we did get one such alarm, and we made back to the fort.
That's your party, was actually...
Yes, yeah. Well, then you embarked on a destroyer. I think it was about all they could get alongside was a destroyer. And then off to the Imbros we went.
How did you feel about leaving Gallipoli and about the failure of the campaign? How did you feel about it?
I never felt better. I was glad to see the last of it, Peter. With the experiences we'd had and the losses you'd had with your mates you'd lost.
Did you feel any sense of desertion, you know, about that you should have stuck it out? Not you personally, but that they should have carried on fighting, or did you feel that the whole thing was hopeless anyway and that it was best to get off?
Well, it's been such a mess that I couldn't be anything else but glad to get out of it, Peter.
What, you say you went to Mudros?
No, we went to Imbros.
Imbros, sorry.
Imbros. I think it's about 10 to 15 miles away. And when we got there, there was a dummy battleship. And that was to make the Turks think that there was something protecting the island, I think.
What did it look like, the dummy battleship? What was it pretending
to be?
Oh,
it's a good replica of the of a battleship.
Do you know which one?
No, not one, any particular one, Peter. But we, earlier on, before we'd gone, they'd taken all the naval personnel off. The actual Navy men, pre-reserve men, they'd been taken off, and we thought they were going on board ship, you know, being commissioned on some ship. But they were still there when we got there. And there's quite a bit of criticism from home papers. John Bull, I think, was one, saying, what was the naval division doing on Imbros and Mudros? Well, we just got there, but they'd been there waiting for transport or something, I don't know, or for ships to go to.
For how long had they been there?
I reckon they must have been there from August. After the Suvla Bay landings, we were told we were going to stand fast on Gallipoli, you know, down at Cape Ellis, until they thought there might be a success there, but apparently that was a failure.
So, well, you were all back together again. Where did you go? What did you do? What were you doing on Imbros during this period? Well, training or trying to get the health back, cleaning up?
Cleaning up generally, and... Of course, I was doing the old butcher's job. I was occupied all right, you know. But there, I tell you, there I first met my battalion commander, who was my battalion commander right through to the end of France when I was wounded. And his name was Beak. He's only a, I think he was a lieutenant then. And he'd been decorated for his work when the evacuation was fairly well completed. He was blowing up vital things on the beaches. Anyway, when I got there, the Fleet Reserve Stokers, you know, they had cases. And these Polly, I was saying Polly Beak, as they used to call him, he's a rather long nose. And the Fleet Reserve Stokers used to say, "Come on, Polly." And he took it all in good part, you know. But the little dream that within 12 months, Polly would be a VC, DSO, MC, and a battalion commander. He was my commander when I got to France. And a fine chap he was, too.
Remember much about him?
Well, I believe he was training for the church. And even after Gallipoli and all that, and France, and his VC and medals, he got fed up between the two wars. And he said to his brother, he said, "This life's too quiet for me." And he dropped everything and joined the army. And the next thing, he was Major General Beak. And he was the GOC on Malta.
During the Second World War? So, did you do any training at all on Imbros, or were you just recuperating and cleaning up?
Well, I was butchered.
Did the rest of the unit train, or...?
I'd completed my training pretty well then, you know.
So where did you go from Imbros?
Well, we embarked for France from there. It should be, I reckon, about February, end of February. I can't remember the name of the ship we came in, but we took on duties like submarine watching and all that, you know, and landed at Marseille.
And where did you go in France from Marseille?
Went right up north France, up to northern France. And there were old freight trains that we parked in to go up there, you know. And I remember we lit a fire in one of them. And the blooming bucket burnt a hole in the floor of the van and went through. But anyway, we landed up in France, and that was quite a... They took me off butchering, then I was back in the trenches.
Why did they take you off butchering? Because by now you must have had a lot of experience, nearly a year's experience.
Well, I suppose... my training and that, you see, I was ready for promotion and that, you know.
So when did you first go into the line and where? Can you remember?
This was Souchez in front of Vimy Ridge, where the Canadian had been. And we did trench duties there and dug lines in for communication and so on.
You were in the front line as well as the digging.
Oh, yes.
How did it differ from Gallipoli? What was your impression of the difference between trench fighting and frontline life on Gallipoli and frontline life on the Western Front? What did you think about it?
Well, it was cleaner, for one thing. You kept yourself fairly clean until the Somme, and then you did get back to Gallipoli conditions, I thought, as regards lice and so on. But is it this Souchez that I eventually got my first leave since joining up, you know. But since
How was it decided who got this leave? How did they pick who was going to go on leave and who wasn't?
By the first letter of your surname, I think. I was among the three M's that left the battalion. And We got 10 days leave.
What do you remember about your leave?
I remember nearly crying when I was coming back. I was on the boat at Boulogne. And I remember when I put foot back on shore, what I'd been through and what I was going to. And I tell you, I could have bust out crying.
How did your family and friends reacted when you came back?
Oh, I quite made a fuss of, you know. Made quite a little ear over.
Did they understand the conditions of fighting that you'd been going through, or did they still have a picture of the war as somehow more gallant and exciting affair?
They were doing their part. The two sisters were in a munition factory at Ainslie. And the old lady was on her own, keeping the house going and having the effects of war all around her.
But did they know what you'd been going through, the sort of conditions of war?
Well, I suppose I did tell them a bit, you know.
I presume they were upset when you had to go back as well, were they?
Hmm?
Were they upset when you had to go back?
Oh, yes, yeah.
So where did you go when you came back from leave?
I must have gone back 10 days after I was on, somewhere towards the end of September. And we were then getting prepared for Beaumont Hamel.
On the Somme?
We were up and down the line, and eventually we started to dig jumping off trenches and so on to about the end of October. And I remember there was a bit of a panic. My battalion was covering another battalion. I won't name the battalion, but there was a panic, and the ones we were covering came back and getting mixed up with barbed wire and so on. And eventually we had to make our way, my mate and I, and go back to the road where we'd come along. And there Mr. Beak was waiting, and he was mustering the men that came back. And we reported, he said, just fallen. But after, when the actual action came on the 13th of November, the battalion I mentioned was put on the left of us alongside the River Ranke. We were on the River Ranke side, right up against the River Ranke. And they put on the left of us, and when the advance came on, they were in front of a redoubt, and they had very severe losses, and they held us up until this redoubt was taken. And there the first tank of the First War was used, I believe. We saw it as we came back.
What did you think when you saw the first tank you'd seen?
Well, it was an enormous, far bigger than these modern ones, you know, and very lumbersome. But see, you stuck.
Did you know what it was?
Oh, yeah.
Had you heard about them beforehand?
I suppose you'd heard about them, in the service, you know. But there's no doubt they put the wind up the Germans. Especially in an action like on a redoubt. Anyway, they certainly got held up there.
Can you remember what happened to you during the attack on the 13th of November? I believe you were in the third wave, weren't you?
Oh, yes.
Can you tell me what happened to you?
Yes, well, the barriers were absolutely terrific. They were the biggest one I'd ever been in. And as we advanced, I got mixed up with the first wave. I didn't know these fellas, you know. So instead of in the confusion, I didn't stand still and wait for my wave to come up. I turned around and walked back. Next thing about it, an officer had his pistol in my stomach. He said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to jam my own wave." And he relaxed then. But I could have easily been shot, you know. If he'd have mistaken that I was trying to run off, you know.
Were you under a lot of fire while you were attacking?
Well, we were, but with the our gunfire, with our barrage, it was hard to tell, you know, what the Germans were doing, firing.
Were you scared at all before you went over in the attack?
I was scared, aye.
But did the fear continue while you went over the top, or did it sort of go off once you'd got something to do, advancing?
Oh, no, we got to our objective, and it was Hamel Station, I think, was our objective. And the Germans were shelling it pretty well then. But we got into a trench, and the HAC came up, and they were going through us, and they were going to advance Boko. But they'd lost their officers or NCOs, and they got down to shells in front of us, and they seemed to be stuck for orders to go on, you know. And our officer was throwing cobs of clay at them, go on, you know. Anyway, I saw Commander Freiberg come up on our right, and he appeared to be holding a stick or a sword, I couldn't tell which. But alternately, he was waving these fellas on, the HAC, and holding his arms, or he'd been hit, you know. But he had been hit, apparently, and he got the VC, he took him into Beaucourt, he took the HAC into Beaucourt.
Did you know much about Freiberg? Had you seen him before much?
Oh, yes, yeah.
What can you remember about him?
Well, I can remember the story of when he first came to England from New Zealand. He was a dentist, I believe, or a chemist, I forget which it was. And he's walking through London, he met Churchill. And he goes up to Churchill and asks for a job. And Churchill must have eyed him up and thought, well, he's a hard nut. And he gave him a job in the RNBR.
Is there anything else you remember about Freiberg? Had you met him personally?
Well, when we were at Bulair, he was somewhere around the peak there, around the harbour. He's making a dummy landing. He swam ashore and was lighting flares and so on.
Did you see any of this? Did you see any of this, or did you see the flares?
We never saw